This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I am here in the studio with Carol J. Perry, and we are celebrating the release of two books. One book was released in August, and the second book is released today, and it is called Now You See It, and it is book number 13 in her Witch City Mystery series. Whoa, Carol, you've been a busy girl.
I have. Last year I wrote two books and a novella. The novella is in the Halloween three-author book called Halloween Cupcake Murders. And then I wrote one in my Haunted Haven series that'll be out next spring. And also Now You See It, the one that's being released today.
Wow.
Release day is so exciting.
Well, it is. It is. And I always tell people, Carol does 1,000 words a day. People say, how could she do that?
So, well, some days I don't do 1,000 words, but it's about the time. I'm working on book 14 now. To give you a little preview, it's called Death Scene, and in it, there's a movie being made in Salem, and somebody important to the movie has to be murdered, and one of the famous houses in Salem, the Witch House, is involved and is even shown on the cover of the book. And I will send, maybe I have already sent you the cover. The cover is done before the writer has finished writing the book, by the way.
And speaking of covers, Kensington does you the best for you.
Oh, I know. I have been so blessed with the same artist has done all of the books in the Witch City series. And they are just so, so Salem.
Oh, they are. Yeah. They capture everything.
And of course, one of the heroes in my book is a large yellow cat named Orion. And Orion is always on. Orion says that the bigger the cat on the cover, the better the book.
And he's pretty big on this one. Yeah.
Now, and now you see it. Of course, it is the Witch City series, named for the city itself, not because my books are particularly populated with witches. They aren't. There's one very special witch named River North, who is a friend of my heroine. But in this book, I got to use a lot of Salem history that seemed very important to me. When I was a kid, and before we bewitched made witches cool, we referred to it as the witchcraft delusion, and Salem was righteously ashamed of its past of killing innocent people. And it wasn't until Bewitched became popular that he began to make light of it. But we studied, when I was a kid, the great shipping history of Salem. Salem was, and to some extent is, a maritime city. And at one time, Salem was the richest city in America because of the sea trade that they went to China, they went to India, they sailed all over the world and brought back wonderful things and learned new things and explored. So I was able to give my heroine, Lee Barrett, who is usually a reporter on a TV station called WICH-TV. Salem does not have such a station, but boy, they should
they
have.
They should, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, Lee is assigned by her boss, Bruce Stone, who likes his employees to wear a major documentary videographers, and she has come up with an idea, or the city has come up with an idea for a museum that will be a traveling show. It will be in Salem, it will go to Newport, it will go to Mystic, it will go to other famous seaports. So I got to use some of the Salem history. I love research. I would be researching a vessel. And when you do research, Patsy, you know this.
Oh.
You get so sidetracked. Oh, this is a shiny object over here.
I love research.
And you've wandered off into learning some more new things that either you really didn't need to know or, ooh, I can use that in the book.
Yeah.
So in Now You See It, of course, I have to have a murder because that's the rules in writing a cozy mystery. And I think I've got a good one. I think you're going to...
Yeah,
as much as one can like a murder,
yeah, it's a good
I think
one.
You're
going to
find it interesting. We have a body under a pile of fall leaves.
Yeah, so that's a great start.
And my witch friend, River North, is instrumental in solving it. And Aunt Ibby, who is a favorite character, my husband says, you know, you've got to write a series and make Aunt Ibby be the main character. No, wait a minute. I'm not through with Lee and Pete yet. But Aunt Ibby has some girlfriends who have become regulars, and they're interested in helping to solve the mystery. And, of course, this clairvoyant, mysterious cat, Orion, is always helpful. And River North, the witch friend, contributes to it. And as Holly was saying, kind of just get into it and learn more about your characters. And I'm still having the mental image of beheading the snowman with axes for her book. I love that kind of thing. It's fun being an author. And when you interviewed Mary Higgins Clark a long time ago, and she said, you said, do you really enjoy writing? And she said, I enjoy having written. And that's it. It's such a relief when it's done and when the release day comes and there's nothing you can mess with it about. It's done and it's in. And blessedly, the reviews before publication have been very good on this one. So I'm really encouraged that the sales will match the reviews.
And it got 5 stars from my sister, Natalie, who is known as a connoisseur of
Absolutely.
Cozy mysteries. And she loved this book. And I will tell you, because there is a lot of research that you put into it, she found it so intriguing. All of the history of Salem. Of course, she knew about this because having read so much about China, Hawaii, all of these places, India, she knew already that many of the ships came from
yep.
Salem.
Yes.
So that, I mean, this was already written about in other books.
Yes.
And so she knew about it. And when she got this book, she said, oh my goodness, this is true. And I know she was going to the encyclopedia, checking, yep, did she get that right? and she got lost too. I mean, she actually, with the book, then she spent like a couple of days researching your research.
You know, it's surprising how many readers do that, and you have to be really careful not make mistakes, because you, like I had mentioned in one of the earlier books, a forsythia bush, and I immediately got at least 3 comments. They don't grow in March. They won't bloom until whatever it was. And I also have to be Aunt Ibby serves wine with a lot of her meals. And I'm not the wine expert that Aunt Ibby is supposed to be. And I got one on, I think it was book 12, and they said, you would not serve that chilled. Oh, now I'm going to have to research the darn wine before I pick one to go with the meal. So, yeah, readers are very perceptive, and it's a good thing they are. And I love that about it.
And speaking of Aunt Ibby does steal the show often. And when you're talking about her friends, my sister thinks she's Aunt Ibby's best friend. I mean, she's like talking to Aunt Ibby. I told you this, that in the middle of the night, she's telling.
Good.
I mean, in the middle of the night, she woke up once, and I mean, she knew who the actress was who should play Aunt Ibby. She said, she woke up in the middle of the night. I heard her, and I go in there and I say, what, you know? What, yeah. She said, I'm talking to Aunt Ibby.
And
I thought, she's not Gaga, I hope. And she said, no, I just saw her on television. I said,
oh, that actress.
And she saw an actress that she thought should play Aunt Ibby in your miniseries. And she's like, check out, go to the TV guide. I said, we don't have TV guides anymore. I don't know how to find out what movie you were watching.
Oh, that's funny.
I mean, this is like 4 o'clock in the morning. And she's sure.
Yeah, late.
Because I think you sometimes wake up in the middle of the night.
Oh, I do. Sure. And when I was at the NINC conference, which was at the Trade Winds, which, by the way, is a lovely hotel.
Oh,
it was
just
wonderful. Service and staff and everything was perfect.
It's one of my favorite in St. Petersburg.
Perfect.
Yeah, St. Pete Beach.
And but I woke up in the middle of the night because I had been concerned about something that I'm working on in book 14, and there was a plot point I needed, and I thought of it in the middle of the night, got up and wrote it down, because sometimes those middle of the night things run away. And so you get up and you think of it. And now my image, and for those who haven't read the books yet, Anya B. is, she admits to 60-something. We don't know how old she is. She still has red hair and intends to have it for the rest of her life, no matter how. And she is very techie. I am not, but Aunt Ibby has all the latest.
Well, she was a librarian.
She was a research librarian, and she still occasionally helps out at the library and trains staff. It's very handy to have a techie who has all the latest. She has a wonderful office. I can just see her office is going to, with the cherry wood furniture, and then all of every doodad and gadget there is there. And of course, my heroine uses that to advantage. I have to check with grandchildren to make sure Ibby is right. And that's what I think. But I see Sharon Gless, who is kind of a glamorous 60-something, very well-dressed, very smart. And I see Sharon Gless.
I agree. Yeah. And speaking of cherry wood furniture, one of the things that I love, and I think so many of the other listeners who have read your books, and Natalie certainly has mentioned, how you describe furniture in general, how you take us into the rooms that you're describing. Mm-hmm. You are really great at that. So we actually visualize them. And one of the reasons is you have a little bit of background in furniture.
I do. I never set out to be a fiction writer. I was a nonfiction writer for years. I started out as an ad copy writer. And then for a long time, I wrote for many antiques and collectibles magazines about various antiquities. My first job is when I was like 12, was as a guide at the Ropes Memorial Mansion in Salem, Massachusetts, which is now the Hocus Pocus House. But I learned about very good furniture there. And then later on, I became really interested in vintage, baby boomer kind of furniture. So I learned a lot about that. So all of my, in both series, my heroines have, for instance, Lee has something I really want, and it's a complete Lucite kitchen set. I saw the tables and four chairs, all of clear Lucite. I saw it in an antique shop in Gainesville and wanted it, but oh my dear, I couldn't afford even one of the chairs. But so I gave it to Lee, and Maureen, in my Haunted Haven series, has inherited an old inn full of Haywood Wakefield furniture. So she has that. And I love sharing my desires in furnishings. And so I'm able to describe them well.
You definitely do. And I think that's part of the fun of,
oh, it is,
you know, of having these details that you just put in there so easily. And then, because you know it.
I know it, yeah. And having written nonfiction for so long, I managed to sneak in a lot of things that I learned while I was writing. I once did a story on the red-cockaded woodpecker, which I know much more about the red-cockaded woodpecker than anybody needs to know, but it was a very successful article. It was reprinted in several magazines. So how can I use that? Well, in the book I'm currently working, I managed to work in that little elusive little bird.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, that's why I think your books stand out. That's why you got, for Haunted Haven, book one, you got a publisher starred review.
I did.
Which was so impressive. And it's people really, you have to know, it's very coveted. And even famous authors, I know a few famous authors who have never gotten a Publisher's Weekly starred review. I mean, and they want that. They really want it.
Yeah.
You know, I've talked to some, and they really, really want, and they haven't gotten
it. I didn't realize how great it was until Patsy told me about some people who don't have it.
Oh, yeah. So it was absolutely, people who have, you know, been writing for 30 years, and they've written a lot of books, best-selling books, but they haven't gotten that coveted. And when I say cover, they really want that. So you did it in book one, and that was pretty nifty.
Yeah, and you always encourage people who want to write, and I encourage people who want to write. Just do it. I have a job, I don't have time. Yes, you do. If you want one page a day for a year,
yeah, you got
that's the
nice,
first draft
nice,
of a whole novel.
That's it. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And in November, we have NaNoWriMo coming up. And
yeah.
Years ago, my goddaughter, Kanisha, convinced me to do it. And, you know, November was busy for me because of Thanksgiving. So I didn't actually have 30 days. I had 25 days because I had to get ready for Thanksgiving. And you write 50,000 words in a month. And just to prove to yourself that you can do it. If you set your mind to it, you can do anything. And you certainly, in 9.5 years, my goodness, we're up to book 13 and plus the third, and plus this novella that you've done with two of your friends. So tell us about, because it's Halloween coming up, Halloween Cupcake Murder. Tell us about this one.
That was interesting. The publisher suggested this. They have done it with other writers, but they select three Kensington writers within a genre. We're all cozy writers. And they asked us each to write a story on a given theme. And the assigned theme was Halloween Cupcake Murder. So that's all we had. We didn't know each other. We had not read each other's, I happen to have read some of Carlene's, but Carlene O'Connor, Liz Ireland, and I were given this assignment. And the novella is about 35,000 words, which is about the third the length of a regular cozy, which is usually around 80,000. And so we each, only knowing that it had to be about Halloween, it had to be about cupcakes, and it had to be a murder. And we each took it in a different direction when I finally, and you don't know what the others are writing until the book is out. It's my first hardcover book, by the way. It's out in hardcover. And because Carlene is the prominent one. She sells more books than I do. But so the cover says, in big letters, Carlene O'Connor, and then Liz Ireland and Carol J. Perry underneath it. But we all had equal space. And one of the things I did, which I think, because I always include recipes in my Witch City Mysteries, because Anya B. cooks a lot and people are interested in recipes. So in my novella, I included a recipe for Halloween cupcakes. And nobody else did. And that's how it wound up on the back cover of the Halloween issue of Women's World, because they largely print recipes, and there was Ina B's recipe right at the top of the page, which was just luck.
And it is. It's when if you're going through the grocery store, you will see this, and it is Halloween treats, and it is a wonderful. I found about half dozen.
Natalie's going to make you cook.
Oh yeah, no. That's for sure. She loves the recipes. And so with you and also with Rita Moreau.
Yeah, Rita.
Yeah. She'll say, you have to make that. I need to test it. So she'll come out with this, and I will have to make this also. Aunt Ibby's easy recipe for triple layer Halloween cupcakes. And I love the idea.
And of course, Women's World is, I got all of my, because I went out and bought $60 worth of this magazine for all my daughters and friends.
Yeah.
And it's in Publix. And my niece up in Massachusetts says Market Basket has it. So I'm sure
all the grocery stores will have it right there at the checkout.
Yeah.
And they do that to entice you, and the covers are always so good. I mean, you want to buy it even though you're not going to do anything for Halloween, but you want to buy it. Beautiful.
Oh, great ideas.
Absolutely. Yep. And there are a few there that I know I'm going to do. I'm just going to do them for people because I have
of course.
Now that I've seen them, you know, it's absolutely fantastic. And that you're on the back, you know, that's a big thing to be on the back cover.
What a surprise.
What a joy.
That is
a joy.
Oh, I wanted to tell you that one of the events I went to at NINC was about the joy, keeping your joy in writing. So I went to it just because I wanted to tell you about it. And I have my notes, and I'll give you the name of the person who presented it, because it was all, because some people do lose their joy or have disappointment in the writing journey about rejections and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that happens, but you have to keep it up.
Yeah, the path back to joy. And the speaker was Sarah with two R's, Cannon. Sarah Cannon. She's a very successful indie author.
Well, I'm going to invite Sarah. Anybody
who
likes joy?
Yeah, do it. She wrote
joy?
Heart Breathing.
Okay. I'm going to invite her, and she'll be on here.
Yeah.
Because, obviously, you
the
have found
back
the,
to
you
joy.
You certainly have found the joy on paper that I talk about.
Yes, yes. This disappointment, no doubt.
Yeah, sure.
And this, the days when you've written and written and written, and then you look at it one day and say, this doesn't work, and you delete. But fortunately, Patsy, I don't know if I told you this, I never did learn to type. I never took typing in school. So I still have to look at the keys, which makes me very slow, which means I edit as I go along because I'm so slow that I will spend, I don't know, 10 minutes on a sentence just fooling around with it to get it right.
So then it's right, and then you don't have to do too much.
I don't have to do lots and lots.
Well, that's what Mary Higgins Clark, at the end, she told me the, you know, in the beginning, of course, there would be times when she'd have to change things, fix things, but by the last, I don't know, 10 books or so, she said every chapter, she'd finish a chapter, it would be exactly as she wanted it, she'd go on to the next chapter, and by the end of the book, that was it.
Yep.
And she could send it in, and the editor there would say, oh, it's perfect, Mary. And Mary would say, yeah, I know it. I did it.
Yeah, I when I turn mine in, it's pretty much the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
But that's from being slow and deliberate and as she said.
Yeah. Yeah.
I miss her.
Oh, I do too. I do too.
I love you.
There are days, and I have this with certain books that I just have them. I have some of her books on my table nearby, and I'll just pick it up, and it's like an old friend. I just loved her so much, and she was so good.
Yeah.
So good to me, and I'll never forget the day that the first time she was on, and she was talking, and she just gave me her home address on air, and by the time I got home, she contacted me. She said, I forgot I was on the radio.
Oh.
Can you take that out?
Yeah.
I said, I'll take that out.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, my goodness, I gave my...
Yeah.
So, after that, you know, once I got a private call from her, and then I had her number, and so we talked sometime off the air.
It's something else. You have to invite me back, because something else wonderful happened. I'll try to tell it fast, because I know we're almost out of time. I've told you before that what set me on my writing path was two books I read back-to-back in the seventh grade. I knew I wanted to be in advertising. I read A Star for Ginny, which was Phyllis Whitney's second book. And in that book, Ginny got a job with an advertising agency as an artist. And the second book was called Natalie Enters Advertising. For years, I looked for that book. And just recently, a woman who was interviewing me for... I'll think of the name of the magazine in a minute. But she said, is this the book you're looking for? And it was Nathalie, N-A-T-H. And it was the book. And I now own the original hardcover copies of both The Star for Ginny and Nathalie Enters Advertising.
So that's such an example of what books can do. And that's why it's so important that you encourage young people to read. And this is one of, of course, I was reading so early in my life. People ask me, how did you start? And I actually can't remember not reading.
Yeah.
I was reading at two. I know I was reading words at two. And like Beatrix Potter, I was reading entire books by the time I was three. And at the age of five, I was reading my mother's Perry Mason. She loved Perry Mason. Books, the paperbacks. And at five, I read my first one. You have to give kids books. You have to make them available. There's no excuse for it. And you have to take them off of these devices because that is not going to inspire them.
Oh, it's going to kill. It's going to be like smoking was to our generation.
It is.
They'll figure it out that it's killing you.
Yeah, you have to take the kids outside under a tree with a book. Take them to the botanical gardens. Take them to the mountain. Take them out and take away those
And you writers for children, you influence lives.
Yes. Oh, you do.
Yes.
You do.
Very much.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We were all inspired by books when we were kids.
Yeah.
I'll never forget the first time I read Little Women. I mean, even today, it thrills me when I think about it.
In my new Haunted Haven book, this is something it hasn't come out yet, but there are four kittens named Beth, Joe,
oh,
Amy.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Okay.
You know, I love my cats.
I know you do. I know you do. And, of course, we love Orion. Orion is the best cat.
Absolutely.
Absolutely wonderful. And has his own fan base.
He does, and he has his own newsletter.
That's right. I was going to say he writes his own newsletter.
Yeah.
Because you're too busy.
That's right.
You're a busy person.
He types even more slowly than I do.
And he's going to come out with a newsletter, I think, in the coming weeks, because we have to talk about the birthday.
Yeah.
Again, remind everybody when it is.
My birthday party is at Walsingham Park in number 8, October 28th, from noon to 3. And if you've got kids, bring them. We have bounce houses for the kids.
Whoa!
And we have food to eat, and we have cupcakes, and we also have a gluten-free birthday cake.
Because I'm gluten-free. You're gluten-free now. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, again, thank you so much, Carol J. Perry, for being here on Joy on Paper. Her new book is out today. Now You See It. And hold it up to the camera. People get it. It's going to be wonderful. And then, of course, also for Halloween, you want to get the Carlene O'Connor.
Oh, yeah.
Liz Ireland, Carol J. Perry, Halloween Cupcake Murder. And get this magazine, and you have the recipe on the back. Anyway, thank you so much. And I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed. You got us all organized. And he saluted me. He saluted Carol. I should have been a general, and you could have been an admiral, because you come from a seafaring.
I do.
Okay. Bye-bye now, everybody. Say something nice to somebody. Bye-bye.